You're listening to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast. I'm your host, Lizzie Benton, company culture coach and founder of Liberty Mind, and I want to inspire people to create progressive company cultures where our human potential can thrive. In this podcast, I talk to organizations, thought leaders, and change makers about the impact of company culture. Together, we can make it thrive. This year, Make It Thrive is supporting Teal Around the World, one of the biggest conferences dedicated to the Teal philosophy. With around 5,000 participants since it first started, Teal Around the World brings together keynote speakers, practical workshops, and storytelling sessions, gathering experienced pioneers and thought leaders like Frederick Laloux, Jos and Thijs de Blok, Gary Hamel, Doug Kirkpatrick, Daniela Lander, and Ricardo Semler, sharing their stories based on practical experiences ranging from startups to huge corporations. Thanks to Teal Around the World, attendees have been empowered to start a change within themselves and their spheres of influence. Now, entering a new era, Teal Around the World would like to bring inspiration to real life. The best part being real connection, building relationships, and creating a network of possibilities. In 2025, Teal Around the World will adopt a hybrid format. Global hubs in different locations all around the world will host local keynotes and storytellers live on stage. This conference will give a chance for participants to experience hands-on workshops in small groups, short speaker reflection sessions, holistic and out-of-the-box experiences, whilst having people from other parts of the globe join virtually. If you'd like to know more, please check out their website in the show notes or consider donating to their crowdfunding page. We hope you'll join us on a venture to change the world. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Make It Thrive, the company culture podcast. As we've been pulling apart these intangible concepts and doing our best to make them more tangible, I hope that you're taking notes of mini experiments you might try from this season. It's easy to get caught up in the knowledge and theory, but as we all know, it's having the courage to put something into practice that helps us truly learn from these ideas. So, as well as stretching your own thinking, I'd encourage you to pick one thing from this season that you could try. What will you commit to? Who will you report your findings to? And most of all, what will you learn? Our journey continues in this episode as we talk about false harmony with Richard Wood, organizational design and transformation partner at The Ready. You may be familiar with The Ready and Aaron Dignan's book Brave New Work, or even their podcast At Work with The Ready. As like many pioneering changemakers, The Ready don't just help others evolve and transform, they also practice what they preach internally. In this conversation, Richard gives a beautifully honest and practical approach to how we can disrupt false harmony and stop pretending that everything's okay when it's not. So let's dive in. Hi, Richard, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Lizzie. How are you doing?
I'm doing so good, all the more for having you on the podcast today, and especially around a very interesting topic that I think many people will have experienced firsthand themselves. False harmony is what we are talking about today on the podcast. Do you want to give us a bit of an intro into what this is, Richard, maybe just to set the scene for this episode?
Absolutely. I think this is a really interesting one that possibly people haven't necessarily used that term or heard that term, but we'll recognize it quite clearly once we've described it, because it's, I think we all know what harmony is, especially in a team or an organization where people are getting along fine and everything is smooth and things are nice. And that could, what we'd probably be talking about here is when that's just a surface level indication of something else that is not that. So it's people look like they're getting on well, but they're holding things back. They're not expressing themselves fully. They don't feel safe. But on the surface, if you just look through the window, you might think, oh, everyone seems to be getting on well. And that is not necessarily an indication of a high-performing team or likely to get results. So we're looking at kind of digging into that. I think it'd be really interesting to see where we end up.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. And like you say, it's really interesting when we look at this, because I always think it's really easy to go into an organization and think that everyone's getting on really, really nicely. And I'm sure you have the same, Richard, in what you do, is that you then start to have conversations with people independently. And that's when the true climate really comes to the surface. And people are kind of talking about the things that they can't talk about or feel like they can't express because of the climate and the culture that exists. And even though, you know, when you walked in there on your initial visit, everybody was really friendly and you thought, oh, this is going to be an easy project. Oh, no.
I 100%. I really like it in a kind of strange way when in the first few sessions, somebody raises something that they're not happy about. They will share a thing, raise a concern early on. Think, oh, someone's literally broken the ice on airing concern, sharing some kind of discomfort. Because that takes some bravery, but it gets the ball rolling for others to do it. And I had that just recently in the first session. We did a kind of retro of what got us here with a new team. And it was all really positive. But you could see that just from some of the interactions between the people, that's what's written on this board in sticky notes isn't what's actually happening. So it was clear from the first hour that we were going to have some fun later on, and we're getting into that this week and hopefully going on in the future. So it really does show up a lot.
Amazing. And I think, like what you said a moment ago there, Richard, about the courage to do this, it is so brave to say something that is, you know, it's present for you and it feels very present for you, but you're in that almost uncertainty of, is this just how I'm feeling? Is this how everyone else is feeling? If I raise it, will people kind of look at me and think, what are you on about? Or so it is such a huge, courageous thing to do.
And I think I agree with that. And the next part of that is, if I raise it, does it mean I've just opened a whole can of worms and we have to process this thing out loud for me for another 2 hours, and I just want to get on with my work, I want to get out of here, so I just hold it back for myself in this moment, but longer term it won't get better if no one raises anything. So there's a courage in the moment for taking probably quite a difficult journey. If you're trying to get a whole team to change the way they interact with each other, that's no easy feat, but I think it can be transformative when people open up and show up in a different way. I think it can just feel better. Just people can be happier at work or feel more or less, especially less anxious, less worried, less held back. And that probably the knock-on effect can be, it can be anywhere, personal life, work life, business results, just team cohesion, etc. It might not be harmonious, but it might be a better quality of team relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting as well when we think about this false harmony, because it doesn't just show up at work. It shows up in so many relationships that we have. And one thing I know that always really interests me is I always joke that I'm a recovering people pleaser. So it's kind of one of those things where, you know, not that I'm conflict avoidance, because, you know, in the work that I do, in the work that we both do, we can't avoid conflict. We need it to be transformational. But I've definitely got better at, I think maybe it's with an age thing and maybe because of the huge influence that my work has just on my own development, is that I am now someone who will raise things even in my own relationship and just be like, I need to talk about this. And people are always like, oh my gosh, how do you do that? Because, you know, even in our personal relationships, there can be that underlying, oh, I really feel like this is getting in the way for us to have a productive relationship. And it feels like, you know, you need to raise something that's very present for you. So I always find this kind of false harmony really fascinating, just on a relationship level, and how once we've surfaced these things, it does feel so much better, you know, for everybody involved, because I feel better for raising it, because finally this kind of, you know, thing is out in the open. But also, I've given that person some clarity and some context of something they maybe either were aware of or weren't aware of. So all of a sudden we're now in the same sphere together rather than in different worlds. But I'm really fascinated. What kind of activates you around this topic? Like, what's your fascination with this false harmony?
I think it is that not the the recovering people pleaser thing, but it's linked to that in some way, is that I suppose the socialization of conflict has been, it's bad, it's aggressive, it's, and the police, it's depicted as somebody shouting and being trying to be dominant rather than coming from a place of like understanding, curiosity, and sharing. It's when it boils over and becomes a destructive force, and that's, that kind of would stick in my mind. And if I bring up something I'm not that happy with or something that concerns me, am I being detrimental to the team? Am I being a troublemaker? And this is the internal narrative, and that, and trying to get over that on a personal level would be partly because of, you know, just being a human, also the work that the both of us do, it really needs to someone to say the thing, but it's the how, and trying to find a path to do it in a better way is what kind of brings me in, because I think lots of people will have different types of beliefs that will be holding them back from being good at speaking up or saying what they truly believe, and not, and we're never taught, actually, we're never taught how to do this well. That's also part of the problem. Don't have any foundational knowledge. You just got these narratives that you play around in your mind, which probably other people are as well, but slightly different. And I think having a conversation about how you're going to approach this before it happens is probably really important. That'd be one of the things I would say. So I'm interested in that. The work is about getting people to enjoy their work more, to be more productive, to be more effective, to have better results and have better relationships. And I think this is one of the key things that is lacking in a lot of teams, whether they know it or not. So yeah, I've been kind of getting more and more fascinated when I see it shows up more and more. And while I experiment with different ways of being, the power of it just seems to become clearer to me.
Yeah, oh my goodness. And I like what you mentioned there as well, Richard, about the fact that for so long, you know, conflict or raising these, you know, elephants in the room, should we say, that's one phrase that's often used, there's that mindset that it's going to be negative in so many ways. And actually, even shifting our mindset towards these things is kind of like that fundamental first part. I mean, would you say that's probably something that people should be aware of first, is actually, let's see conflict differently, let's see these elephant in the rooms as some gifts that can enable us to move forward?
Yeah, I think that's a nice way of looking at it, because, you know, one thing we're talking about is like what's holding you back from doing your best work, and is it an obstacle or is it a tension? And this is a thing that, if we identify it, we can do something with it. If we ignore it and this elephant just gets bigger and bigger, or we have more and more elephants, there's not so many places that can store that many elephants. So I think, yes, it's about looking at how you see conflict. And we're using the term generative conflict, kind of to oppose destructive conflict. So something where everybody learns and everybody gains from that interaction. Possibly not in the moment. It's not going to be easy, but it is going to be helpful. It is going to be useful in the long run. And it is about building that muscle or that ability to navigate it and just sit with it for a moment and not look for necessarily a solution. I think the other side of that is looking for a solution. It has to be conflict resolution rather than just expressing a conflict and that being okay. That we don't need to find the answer. Doesn't need to be somebody winning. Doesn't need to be somebody who's right. You just let's share opinion and see whether we can come to a situation where people are okay with it, and not necessarily move on, but not let it drag us down either. It's just that we can have a difference of opinion, and that is okay. We don't need to, you know, fire someone. It's just, that's just what it is. And as long as we have a framework for doing that, we're just going to be in a better place.
Yeah, it's interesting as well, because I love what you picked up on there about this need for a resolution all the time. And especially in some of the projects I've worked on, some of the elephants, should we say, once they've been exposed, are so deeply ingrained within the climate or the culture of the company that it isn't going to take
something quick or easy to just shift that. That's going to take time. You know, for example, people saying, actually, I think we've all got an extreme lack of trust happening here in the company. You know, highlighting that elephant, you know, building trust, as we know, takes time. So that isn't something that we can all of a sudden go, oh yeah, we'll just fix it easily with this. Like, that's becoming aware of it and knowing that this is going to be a journey in order for us to start shifting the climate to greater trust.
Yes. And kind of a lack of an appropriate level of trust will hold it back. And the more you are able to experience this and see other people playing their role in a conflict situation, you will get to a much higher level of trust. Because people know, don't they? People know when someone's holding something back. They might not know what's going on, but someone's quiet or shifting in their seat, or there's something you might think, oh, they might be hungry, they might be bored, they might be thinking about something else, or they might be really annoyed with what's going on and don't have a way to deal with it. Because, and also don't think it's an I think one of the issues is it's always on the individual. Why don't you speak up? I said, well, why wasn't there a platform or a context for me or all of us to be able to speak up? If it's always the individual, then it's destined to fail because it's hard. If it's reliant on individual effort and bravery, then of course we are not necessarily going to have something that's sustainable.
Yeah.
Because if that person's away for a week, no one says anything, or they leave the company and then everyone's quiet. It's too. Yeah, that's too difficult. It has to be a team sport, to use that kind of analogy, where people are doing it together, asking the right questions, creating the right conditions, and doing it together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really important thing to understand, is that as much as we really want to encourage that personal bravery, it's hugely risky, especially in cultures where that, you know, there hasn't been established a environment or a space to voice those tensions. And so, like you say, once we start to develop those patterns or those rituals where we can actually create space to discuss tensions, and we know that that's the expectation as well.
And that's when we've been doing some work on something we're calling principled disagreement. And it is disagreeing based on a certain number of principles, and it's defining and explicitly stating those principles up front, or it doesn't even have to be for a whole team, but today we're working on these principles. You know, we focus on the issue, not on the person. We listen before we respond. We embody curiosity rather than responding immediately. We ask for a timeout if we need one, those kind of principles. And then you at least have something to anchor to when you're disagreeing. And it could be written on the wall, it could be on a team page, it could just be in the chat in whatever Zoom or Microsoft Teams or wherever you are, to give you something as a springboard for intervening or speaking up or asking a question or something. I think that's,
yeah,
it's a little bit of pre-work, but once they're established, if it's an intact team, they can stay there, or they can just be modified over time. I think that is something, it's probably part of a team chartering, which would always say is useful. How are you going to show up? What tools are you going to use? When are you going to meet? How are you going to meet? And then how will you show up for each other? I think also not an easy job. It takes time and effort to actually produce this, but I think the time and effort put in the beginning pays off at the end or throughout the process, because there's no real end to this unless the team disbands. And it's really important, just to be saying, we value conflict. It's just one we really simple. We value it, and this is how we do it. We do it by being respectful, by asking questions, by hearing from everybody. It's some of it's really, really common sense, and nobody does it. So because it's still quite kind of scary, and it's not something we are trained to do, especially if there's a leader in the team or other dynamics at play, different identities, different age, etc. It can play into this and cause, or just mean that it's more difficult for some people to speak up. And those are the people we want to hear from. We want to hear from different types of people from different experiences, different backgrounds, to get diversity so we can actually have better ideas. It's not a nice to have. I was saying if you want a good strategy and one person makes it, then it's not a good strategy. No matter how good one person is, seven other people in the room could add, even if they only had 1%, which what is 1%, which compounding, just you can't have the best idea. It's just, it's not possible. So I feel like, but if they can't disagree with a little bit, then we can't, we won't even know. Can't even test that theory if no one gets the chance. So it's not just relationships, but also building a strategy, creating a new idea, implementing a plan.
Yeah,
the power of the collective would be what you're trying to get. And if you're too harmonious, you're not going to be tapping into some of the goodness inside all of those people. Everyone's got something to offer. Otherwise, you shouldn't be in the team. You made a problem with your hiring or choosing the team that everyone's got something to offer, a skill or an idea or just a word can trigger something really amazing sometimes. Yeah. If we don't have that in the world, then we're really missing out.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh, Richard, that was brilliant. Not one person can do a strategy. It's so true. But how often do we see that where this, you know, one person has created this supposedly amazing strategy that everyone else has to follow blindly?
And sometimes they might ask for feedback on the deck, and I've been working on it for 3 months. And if you say, what do you say? Yeah, it's great. Or I would change this word on slide 7. It's not, this fundamentally is flawed because you didn't consider the market conditions in Asia because you're not an expert on that. And it's, you can't say that after someone's, hopefully people would get to a place where they could say that early rather than late. You've been working on something for 3 months. I mean, that's flawed in itself, but that is what happens. It's too late.
Yeah, it is.
You can scrap it and start again. And it's, so that's how it plays out, because it hasn't been based on collaboration in the first place. How can you do conflict collaboratively if you don't do the creation and the implementation of stuff collaboratively? Just change our whole dynamic just when we get to the toughest conversation of all. It's not likely.
Oh my goodness, so true. I'm laughing hard because I'm just like relating to all of this so much.
Flashbacks of meetings you've been in and observing. Me too. When you feel the passion coming through, it's because it's from lived experience, not stuff I've read or listened to. It's like, oh yeah, I remember being in that time and this happened, or this didn't happen, and I came out of it feeling a bit frustrated. And at that time, I probably would have thought it was only me, but other people would be frustrated for similar or different reasons. And then, and actually, it's not fair on the leader in that case either. They're people too, would you believe? And they have needs, and there's a lot of pressure. If they're the only person making a thing,
absolutely,
they're under pressure to do that. And sometimes you might hear, I wish people would give me more feedback. And yeah, okay, that's the other side. Well, have you created the conditions to make that happen? Like, kind of, you know, kind of, usually kind of means no. So if it's not a clear yes, it's a no. I'm like, yeah, I've done this, this, and this. Or I ask for it. Yeah, we need more than asking. We need like agreements and clarity and a co-creation of that. And I think, so this false harmony is a surface level manifestation of so many things, from leadership to culture to agreements to teaming to all kinds of things from the organizational operating system. And the problem is, it looks good, as we talked about at the beginning. So it's not, if everyone was shouting at each other, someone would come and do something straight away.
Oh yeah.
But if people are just getting on, I think we're fine. Just dig a little bit deeper and see if we are. Of course, some teams do get on, but it might be because they have these types of agreements that they know they can disagree, and it might actually mean that we disagree less because we have a mechanism. We have an agreement in place on how, and it doesn't even get there. We do it early. So actually, can I just build on that? Can I give you some feedback? And it doesn't, it happens before it becomes awkward, which I feel like is a nice way to be.
Yeah.
So if you feel it, if you sense it, start, you know, just say it, or the team makes space for that in a process rather than let's create a thing, make a slide, present it. Now let's sit down and think, create some space, come back to it later. What can we offer to make this better?
Yeah, it is, like you say, it's there's so many more elements that need to be worked on before you can start just diving straight into disrupting false harmony. It's like, we can't just pick something out and go, oh yeah, we're just going to work on this, when you haven't created the environment for that to take hold. I suppose one question I have, because like you mentioned earlier, you know, we want everybody to be, you know, feeling like they can bring up these elephants in the room. So I suppose a question I have, and some people that listen to this, you know, they might not be, you know, in a role of influence, should we say. So what would you say to people who, you know, they're definitely recognizing this false harmony? Are there any tips that you would give to people who want to shift it, or how they can start to navigate this kind of situation?
Yeah, I think that's, this was my advice, depending on context, probably a few things. One would be, if you might have might not be in an influential position, but I'm going to assume that you have some work that would be shared in that team. So you might bring a small piece of work to the team and really invite, or actually you can, there's some structures that allow this to happen. So instead of saying, tell me why this is good, say, deliberately tell me everything that is wrong with what I have done. And it, a little bit of shock factor. It takes a bit of confidence. You might need some mental preparation to do that, but there are some liberating structures that do that. I think and Triz is one of those. And there's a thing called red teaming. Let's just find all of the things that could help us. We could just destroy what we are planning to do. So you can kind of get into that little bit of mindset in a playful way. That would be one, if there's something you'll kind of present to the team and kind of facilitate or kind of semi-facilitate a moment like that. And I would hope, and this is where it becomes difficult, I would hope that each team has a regular rhythm of doing retrospection or learning and a reflection. If they have those moments, can say, I'm noticing that I myself, coming from the I space, I myself sometimes don't speak up. And I sense it in others. I want to check that. And then just start the conversation. That takes a little bit of bravery. If there's a reflection space, that makes it a little bit easier, especially if people, other people are showing different things. Again, often teams don't necessarily have that type of reflection space. They might say, let's review the project, not let's review how we worked on this project, which is a very different question. Anything else popping to mind? Of course, try in a one-on-one situation first with somebody that you know well, you trust and have a relationship, and then preload it with, I'd like to have a conversation, it's going to be tough for me and I trust you so much that I want to practice this with you on a real thing, and set that context. I feel like having that up front and also giving them a way to say, actually I'm not in the mood to do that, so let's not do that, but okay, we'll find a time that is right. So it's just not running like a bull at a gate, and actually like just taking the time and being really deliberate about how you go about it would be a nice starting position. And just working where you do have some element of control or influence, like how you do it is how you can do it. You can't maybe control the whole team, but you can make small interventions would probably be the nice place to start.
Yeah, that's very practical, Richard. Thank you so much for sharing that. And also I liked, because I think something important as well is, like you say, if you're working on that team level, you know, we all really hope that teams have that charter or those principles to work with. But I know from my experience of working with teams and the teams that I'm sure you've developed as well, you know, working on those agreements together is such a vital part of it as well, like you mentioned earlier. So from your experience, Richard, you know, what have you seen from teams who have managed to face this false harmony? What are some of the trends or the kind of threads that have kind of gone through them that you think might offer some insight to people?
There's one which is harder to pin down in terms of numbers and KPIs, but it is that kind of people stop bringing up the same topic because it wasn't actually explored fully the first time or the second time or the third time. So it just keeps coming back. Even it could be the same person not getting what they need. So people start getting a bit more what they need, and then it doesn't go away, but it moves on to the next phase of that work or that issue. And I feel like that's something that shows up. You'd have to be in the meetings to probably see that, because a lot of that would go under the radar because it'd be on a few cards on a Kanban board or in the conversation. Beyond that, I think, I've seen moves where, you know, more work gets done, but also the kind of employee satisfaction or whatever the survey, the pulse survey might show some improvement, because I don't want to say the word happy, but there's a certain contentment that people get from having real conversations, because they have that human connection a little bit more. It makes a difference. And, oh yeah, I do feel like I can be myself at work a little bit more. That kind of comment, or I feel close to my team, I feel close to my manager. Those types of questions might show a shift. I'm not saying it goes from 0% to 99%, but like a significant jump can occur over time from these types of things. So we're talking at the meeting level, getting work done level, and also the employee satisfaction or the team satisfaction level.
It's so true, Richard. And I think, like you said, from that contentment and just that general atmosphere of feeling so much more collaborative, that actually if you bring something, that it's going to support the team and the culture in some way to move forward. And I think it's really interesting because, I mean, I've certainly known, I'm sure we've all got many examples of where this false harmony has festered, and it's festered into something really toxic, because if we don't start shifting it, it just, like you say, at the end of the day, there's only so many elephants that can fit in the room, and it just becomes, you know, people start leaving, or you start getting real business critical situations happening because people just simply, communication is essentially breaking down.
Yeah, and people might leave or just disengage with the work, which is arguably worse, and provide nothing to the team and get nothing from the work themselves, which is sad. Yeah. I mean, you know, we spend so much time there and people are generally motivated to do it. And if it's not happening, and the idea about it being toxic, I think, and then it starts, it might boil over to moments of the people getting angry, literally saying the wrong thing, and it might be a small trigger, but it's been building up for however long, years sometimes. I've just had it, but letting off some steam, but in a way that people can't really understand, and then it becomes, I don't know, John is lost it again, he's gone off on one again. It's like, yeah, and if we lean in with that curiosity, what is John, just a loose cannon? Maybe. But also, is there anything that the environment has caused him to do that? Anything within our team that created this situation? Not necessarily today. And then it's really hard. If you haven't been aware of it for all of that time, it's hard to suddenly think, oh yeah, we've planted the seed for this in 2019 when we started the team and didn't do the work of figuring out what this team is for, what it's about, and how we're going to be together. I really think it's... it blocks the team actually being, sometimes actually being a team, not just a group of people that get together to have a meeting or do some work.
Yeah, that's such a good clarification, actually, because so often we use the term team, but how often are they actually working as a team and just a group of people who all have to work in the same department or something, forced together? But you're a team!
people on a calendar invite. It's... yeah, I mean, even that is, that's where it shows up when people accept a calendar invite, because they can't even say no to a calendar invite. And I try to reinforce this idea: it's an invite, you can always say no. That's like the whole idea of an invite, and the system gives you the option, and it gives you a hedging option of saying maybe. So either people just say yes to everything or just don't respond and don't turn up. And it's like, it's really interesting. I this is right. One of the symptoms, like, well, if you can't even say no to the meeting, how could you say no in the meeting?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so true. So for people listening who are really now fascinated by this false harmony, what kind of resources or things would you navigate people to that you think are brilliant for diving deeper into this topic, would you say?
One of the influences we've looked at is, let me think, look at some resources on principled struggle. It really is really an interesting concept. And I mean, it sounds kind of heavy, but it really gets down into this principled level of what you can unlock by having, you know, by focusing on a principle level. And it can be on societal level, on a team level, organizational level. So I feel like that is a really interesting concept to dive into, because it's not just in a business context, and it guided some of our thinking on when we kind of started working on the principle disagreement thing on a more kind of business team focus. So that would be something to look at. And then more general kind of ways of working, say team chartering, working agreements. What else? It's worth looking at some of the kind of classic Google stuff about teaming and psychological safety, because it can be a useful tool to say psychological safety is a really important enabler of performance. And with psychological safety, this happens. To get psychological safety, we're actually going to have to disrupt some things to create that. So it can be a nice, nice bit of data from a big company that helps kind of put the argument out there for the need for a change, or at least the need to consider how you could be better and create this more psychologically safe environment built on trust and respect and those types of things. Mm-hmm. So kind of from the very detailed to the more general, this is how to be a slightly better team phase would be the directions I'd point people into.
Amazing. That's great. I would add a few to that as well. I think I really love the book Moose Heads on a Table by Karen Tennelly and Lisa Gill. And I think that I know we call it elephants in the room, but the Swedish call it moose heads on the table, which is a far more grim metaphor, but I think it does speak very highly of what's going on in the environment. So I would definitely recommend that as well to add to the collection. But have you got any final kind of words of wisdom, Richard? Anything that you want to leave our audience with?
Oh, no pressure. I think
yeah.
I think one thing that we talk about actually, which is really hits home with people, and in case we don't have a visual here, but we have like these two, this one line, what are you trying to move away from when you're like, what are you avoiding if you don't engage in that kind of conversation, when you stay in the harmonious situation, when you don't feel the harmony, and what would you actually be trying to work towards? And have that visual in your mind, like, in this moment, am I leaning towards avoidance, or am I taking a step to get towards the type of team, the type of person, the type of organization we want to be? And making that conscious decision in the moment can be tough, but you can kind of train that. And I think this is an interesting, not sure it's a tool, but it is an approach to just imagine the line. Am I going to the avoidance, or am I going towards the desired state that we're looking for?
Oh. That is a great analogy. I love that. I love that so much. And it's so practical. I always love things and they're practical as well. So thank you. Thank you so much, Richard. There are so many takeaways from this conversation. It's been a rich conversation. So thank you so much for joining me.
It's been fantastic. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Make It Thrive, the Company Culture Podcast, with me, your host, Lizzie Benton. If you've enjoyed listening and want to keep up with all things culture, don't forget to subscribe. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to welcoming you back next week.